Welcome to the Vitality Vision podcast. I'm your host, Greg Bennett. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Barry Miller and David Vogel, the president and CEO of Voluge Investment Management and Voluge Health. And today we are joined by one of the most incredible athletes in the world, Jordan Stolz. And I am sitting here with his two gold medals and his silver medal. In the studio, we have his coach, Bob, who's arguably the greatest speed skating coach in the world. Jordan is our number one Volo athlete. He goes to the Olympics in Milan and he performed out of this world. We couldn't have been more proud of him. And this episode with him just sitting with us and talking through every race that he did, oh man, what an episode. You don't want to miss this one. I hope you enjoy it as much as we did. Oh, mate, so you guys just got back from Milwaukee. I hear you're coaching David.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Doing
yeah.
some team pursuit training.
When I watched what was your final race called? The Mass Start.
Mm-hmm.
And I was texting David at the time. Actually, Barry was on, we had a text going. Oh, yeah. And I ruined it for Barry because he wasn't able to watch it live. Right. I'm yelling at the TV. Jordan needs a teammate to help. You know, mm-hmm. a bit like cycling the peloton. You need someone to drag you up. Two guys got away for anybody that didn't watch it, but it was like an incredible. Way. Are you getting David ready to be your next yeah. mass start?
Yeah, yeah. Like I had to race what 8 heats before Jordan.
Yeah, and
I got to see him whiz by, and
that's amazing.
It's just no comparison.
But a big shout out, David. When did you start? Only like 4 or 5 years ago.
I started 4 years ago.
And you got into it,
yep.
and that's how you guys became mates, and that's how now Jordan's one of our Volo athletes mm-hmm. that David headhunted and recognized him before
yeah.
the Olympic right. golds and everything else. You yeah. saw some talent, mate.
Oh, yeah.
And
I've been hooked by the sport. It's yeah. it's an amazing sport, very exciting,
yeah.
enjoyable, getting that speed.
Has he been helping you? You went to Milwaukee this past week. I was meant to go, but I was like...
Well, aside from giving tips, the thing that helped me go fast the most was Jordan actually pushing me.
Just
oh, really?
Seeing is believing, eh?
Is that a tip? Do we have any footage of that? I don't know. Does anybody have footage of Jordan pushing David?
There might be, but I've never seen the corner of the ring come at me faster.
You're looking for a crash pad.
Yeah. How was that? Like, was it seriously like Jordan pushing you is faster than you on your own? Yes. I imagine.
Yes. Because I was striding too as fast as I could. And then additionally, Jordan was pushing me. So I imagine that, yeah, it definitely felt very fast. I don't know what speed I was going
at. Jordan, you should throw David a bone and say he pushed you too.
Yeah, I guess I could say that.
I actually think there's something. There's a business model in here. Do you want to get pushed by the fastest athlete in the world on ice? Fly up to Milwaukee? Maybe. There you go. There's a little business.
Right, that's true.
You and I will speak after this. We'll get right. Yeah, but you've been improving over time, David. You
yes.
feel like you're getting there?
Yeah, steadily improving, yeah. I still got a lot to work on technique and also conditioning, but
yeah.
But it's coming along bit by bit.
Yeah, yeah. But is it a sport normally, Jordan, that somebody, not to say that David's old, I mean, I'm older than him, so I'm allowed to say it, but is it a sport that you see normally people in the yeah. later years giving a try?
Some people.
Yeah.
It's significantly more difficult to start when you're older, but I think David's making some good progress.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a couple masters athletes at the competitions who started later in life and doing fantastic
yeah.
after
yeah.
say, 20 years of skating. So,
right.
So certainly we're not Olympic hopefuls, but we're getting
maybe.
Better.
You needed some help on the mass start race, so I think yeah. there's still an opening
okay.
for you. Although I say that, Jordan's got a couple of mates, training mates here that are actually in studio with us now. Maybe one of them, the next Olympics, can help tow you around, right?
Yeah, possibly Max could do that.
Yeah.
He can do some work for me.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be
or
amazing.
Carl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although he might betray me and go for the win himself, so.
I love it, guys. Well, look, Jordan, you've got three guys on this table and a room full of others that just were watching those Olympics, and we were like,
awesome.
Absolutely thrilled, mate. Yeah. It was really, look, I'm bringing goosebumps. Just even thinking yeah. about it, we were yelling and screaming. I had my kids with me. I know we were all just so, so excited. But tell me, that post-Olympics, has it been crazy for you? Has it settled down? What's it been like?
It was kind of crazy, but like ending the games and then going right to Heerenveen to try and do the world sprints and world all-arounds, trying to double that.
Oh.
Like I didn't do as much media stuff as I probably would have if I would have, you know, yeah. planned to skip that.
Yeah.
But I think that was probably like the toughest thing, you know, to kind of look forward to because it's two like combination races on one, you know, weekend, 4 days. Nobody's ever done it with, you know, zero rest. So you do, I mean, it's 8 races total. And the final day is the 10K, which is like the hardest one. So but
come on, you've just won 2 Olympic gold and Olympic silver. The whole world is watching. The most decorated U.S. athlete at the Winter Olympic Games, by a long shot, by the way.
Yeah.
And then you're going, okay, a couple of weeks later, I'm just going to go do another race. I mean, it doesn't, to me, that's, it doesn't even make sense.
It's more so for like skating tradition, because Haydn and Shawnee are the only two who have won like both, but nobody's done it on the same weekend.
Okay.
I was looking to try to win the sprints just so I could have my name with Haydn and Shawnee as, you know, world sprint, world all-around champion.
Okay.
Got silver, so that didn't work out.
That's all right. I honestly, mate, for all of us, if you want to call us laymen or whatever.
Right.
We honestly don't give a shit, mate. You've got the two Olympic gold, that Olympic silver. It really was. I mean, I'm talking to my family back in Australia, and they're like, is that Jordan Stolz, the same guy that you know, Greg, and you guys work with at Volerich Health? And so, mate, we were thrilled. And
Oh, yeah, the whole company was. We were all had it on the TV.
Yeah.
And everybody cheering.
Room full of people.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cheering
on,
yeah. Great. I think it's a moment that we'll all never forget. And I think it's something for you to just, you know, don't just breeze over it, mate, because it was really something. All of us.
Have you had time to take it in and really think about it?
Not a whole lot. You know, when I got home, just a little bit. And even now, like, you can kind of take it in just talking about it and, you know, going, you know, down here and actually, you know, kind of meeting with, I don't want to say the sponsors because David's more like a friend to me, but meeting with the sponsors and having a good time. So then you kind of look back on what you've done.
What you've accomplished.
Yes.
Awesome.
So you don't just lie awake in bed and just sitting there and go, wow.
Just sitting there looking at your medal.
Sometimes.
Like, that's Barry and I do. I'm done. Life's over. I'm already done.
Just under my pillow, then I do.
Yeah. And how have your family been since? Have they been, I mean, obviously your mum and dad, they've driven you to the ring for 15 years or so. I mean, it's a team effort, isn't it? Like, how's that all been sharing that journey with them, especially post-races?
I think they're super proud and they're, you know, maybe more proud than I am because I'm the one who did the work right and then I competed in the races, but they also had to believe for however many years that I could actually, you know, get somewhere, you know, to be successful. And they kind of put in that sacrifice unknowingly. Of course, I'm the one who's always thinking, oh, I'm going to get here, get there, and then finally do it, right? But it's kind of more like, you know, they're just following blindly. And then when you finally win, I think that feels really good for them.
Mm-hmm. I've had the pleasure of meeting Jordan's parents a few times and they are spectacular people and highly dedicated And I think it's great to have that support behind you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We were all pretty chuffed. I'm not going to lie. When they actually had Volerich Health shirts on at one of the races at the Olympics. Oh, yeah. We're like, I've got snapshots on my phone. Oh, that's pretty cool. It makes us feel special, is it? Because we're not just, like you said, we're a company, but we're also mates as well. So we share this, not just as like, oh, we're sponsoring Jordan. I think we feel very much a part of this. So it was really cool. But I want to go back. Let's go back a little bit. We're talking post-race, but I want to go to the races themselves. I remember saying to my wife, was it the 500? So it's the second gold medal. And I said, Laura, I don't think I've ever seen an athlete that just knows how to win. There was something deep in you that is very rare. I think there's people that learn how to win and then there's winners. And I feel like you're the second of that. The way you just came back at the end there, I got to know what was going through your head because it felt like you were behind. I don't know. Were you? It looked like you were.
I might have been slightly behind, but I thought if we're like pretty much even at the last 100 or if he's a little bit ahead, I can, you know, I should be able to take him down just because usually my second lap's better, my endurance is better. And I've had multiple races where I've beaten the guy in the last 100 meters. So I actually had a lot of confidence going into
he
that
was
last
pissed. 100. He was not happy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. He was not happy. Are you guys mates? Do you guys talk or is
not,
he actually?
Not really. We met at the Junior Worlds actually back when he was, you know, not good at all. He was skating like a 110 in the 1000, maybe even slower, like a 30, high 35 in the 500. And then the next season he joined the pro team Regabor and then he got really good. He was skating like kind of low 34, low like 107. And then he was there all of a sudden. And then the next season he got even better and then even better. And now he's like my main competitor.
Okay, so he was always coming at you. Yeah.
Yeah, but he came out of nowhere because he was kind of, I don't want to say garbage, but he wasn't really good at all as a junior on long track.
Yeah. So you've had your eye on him. But listen, okay, let's step back from that one then. The first race, 1,000. Ton of pressure on your shoulders.
Right.
I think we'd spoken a few times, you know, 6 months ago. And honestly, going into any kind of race as the world number one, as the world record holder, world champion, all of these things, Did you ever feel expectation gorilla was heavy? Did you ever feel like, oh man, how am I actually going to pull this off? Or how did you manage that expectation?
I think I knew I had it in me to do it. You know, I think I had higher chances than everybody else. Mm. But to have that, like, you won all the thousands all season. Now you just have to do one more. And everything's on that race. Like, this is everything you've trained for the last, however, you know, 4 years and the whole summer. And now there's an opportunity where Yenning could actually, you know, possibly take that away. And if he gets gold in the 1,000, his chances are better in the 500, and he could end up with 2 golds. I could get 2 silvers, mm-hmm. kind of the same spot he's in now. And I really didn't want that.
So what did you say to yourself? Like, I got to understand, like, how does a champion, because I put myself in that situation and it's scary. It's almost like, how do you turn that pressure into, like they say, that pressure is right. a privilege. How do you switch that around?
I just try not to think about anything negative. Right. I mean, in the 1,000, I knew it, like the second lap, I can kind of pull off anything there if something, you know, isn't exactly right. And I was thinking I wanted to be even with him at 600. And then when we got there, he was over three tenths ahead. And I thought this was a bad position to be in. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, oh, you could actually, you know, win the gold. But
you had a moment. Yeah, I mean, these are split moments. Obviously, it's not a very long race.
I think it's just great that you were able to think about the race because I was nervous for you because here you are. I know you've won many races.
Right.
But now you're at the Olympics and you got all the cameras and you know everybody's watching. So just the fact that you're even thinking about the race is...
Well, I really didn't want to lose. That's why I was thinking about it. That second to last corner, I just attacked as hard as I could, threw 2 arms down, and I could feel myself really gaining on him on the backstretch. And I felt that before with like Kjell Nøis in the 1500 meter. And it's a good feeling because then you know like that when you get that inner, mm-hmm. you should be able to blow by him.
So it really is like switching gear and focusing purely on the process. Like, stop thinking about the finishing line, the outcome, or this could be silver if I don't do this, or this could
just
be
what I can do in the moment.
What can I do in the moment?
Yeah.
And that's a big takeaway. But then you win the first gold medal. Mm-hmm. You know, it was really great to see you up on the dais, the US anthem playing. You know, I got to tell you, it's the best anthem. I love the US anthem. I'm an Australian, right? So I hate saying that, but I'm also an American, so I'm allowed to say. But it really was a special moment, mate. You held back the tears, though.
I wouldn't say I was about to cry.
Really? No, didn't have that moment?
No. Not quite.
Not quite.
No.
But did you feel by winning that first one then that you were free to play in the next races? It was like, okay, I've at least got...
I think it was a big relief. I could focus way more on like 500 after that, just because now I have, you know, a gold medal, I'm Olympic champion, mm-hmm. and nobody can really take that away from the 1,000 meter. Mm-hmm. And going into the 500, I knew the chance was definitely there. So I just had to put it together, a clean race, go out there as... you know, skate the best I can, and I should be able to win it.
Yeah, it's amazing. But they were fast times, too. That was a pretty quick track, wasn't there? Olympic records.
I don't know how they made the track so fast, because we were going faster there than other places at sea level. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm not going to answer that for you. I have no idea about speed skating. So
They actually imported Paul from Milwaukee to actually help make the ice there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so did he make it, like, American fast? Like, is there some kind of ice that U.S. skaters prefer over the rest of the world? I'm being like a bit...
I don't know if he did that. But they did make it fast, and I think it was because they were saying the temperatures were high, and it makes the air thinner, mm-hmm. and then higher humidity actually reduces the air resistance.
Okay.
So there's something with that, but I don't know. It could have just been Paulie's, you know, a good ice maker.
So. That's amazing.
So, Jordan, as a professional athlete, you know, competing in the Olympics, do you get jitters before the race, or are you pretty calm and mellow?
I guess it's jitters, but it's not something that's going to, you know, affect me or crack my performance. It's just something you use in the race. Mm-hmm. So you don't even think about it, actually. I mean, your heart rate's up, and you can feel it pounding, but I'm not really thinking about it.
Didn't you fall over in the trial race?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does that... I'm not judging, by the way. I couldn't even stand on the ice. I'm just saying, is that in the back of your mind? Like, anything? Like, do you... I mean, you said you get rid of negative talk as quick as you can, but do those things flicker through your mind or anything?
A little bit in the days leading up, because I'm practicing starts and I thought, you know, if this could happen, you know, you could fall on your face, whatever. But I had already like kind of pre-thought, like, you can't think about that in the race.
Yeah.
Because if it does happen or goes wrong, like, you just can't have that in your mind.
No.
So you just go to the line and don't think about anything and just send it. So,
yeah. Mate, as you can tell, I love the power of the mind. I love every conversation above the shoulders. And we discuss this quite often. So I'm thrilled to hear how you manage those expectations, how you manage pressure, all of that. And I think it'll serve you really well going forward and the rest of your career and whatever you do. But I want to talk about the final. Well, you've had 2 more races after you've got 2 golds now. You know, you're up on the dais twice. not really getting a chance to celebrate because you've still got more to do. It's a lot to do. Third race, the Chinese athlete, I can't remember his name. I apologize to him. Did we know about him? I couldn't tell with the commentary if we were meant to know who this guy was.
I knew he was good. I didn't think he was that good.
He had a fly.
That's how he did that race.
Yeah. I mean, he won. He really set an incredible
time. Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it was the time I skated in Enzo, like 141.9 was the same time that I skated at the World Cup before, and kind of, you would say, faster ice because it's at a little bit higher altitude. And then seeing the difference between him and Kjeld, I was like, that's kind of a big difference. So either Kjeld had a bad race or he had a really good race. And I assumed he had a good one, but I thought I could do better. Mm. And then I got out to the line and I went and I saw 23.3 for my opener. And I thought, that's okay. We'll see what the first lap is. And then I saw 25.4 and I thought, this is kind of a bad spot. And then I just started attacking as hard as I could, but I couldn't.
You're seeing times as you're flying down the track?
The lap board. Yeah.
How fast are you going?
Probably 37, 38, 39 in that race. Yeah.
Miles an hour.
Yeah.
It's really quick. Yeah. And you got to be Bob, your coach.
Yeah. He has to be quick at the lap board, yeah.
He's telling you what times you're I never knew you were actually calculating as you went.
Is it digital or is he actually doing it for you?
It's like a digital lap board.
That's cool. That's really quick. What is 37, 38 miles an hour to kilometers? Sorry, I'm going to quickly do this just because I have to.
That's about 60.
Yeah, 60K an hour. Thanks, Dave. That's why I have a mathematician. Right? Yeah, so when you crossed that line, was it, I don't want to say disappointment, but it was, obviously you would have loved to have the three golds, or was it just a little bit like, okay, I did the best race I can, move on?
It was a bit of disappointment just because I saw the splits in the race, and I was hoping it would have been better. But it was also kind of a relief that Kjell didn't beat me. I mean, he was pretty close, to me getting third, and that would have been bad if he would have beaten me. So I would have not have liked that.
Okay. Yeah. So you could handle the second. And we talked about the mass start. Take us through that a little bit. It was, I know from talking to you, I think 6 months ago, I don't know if it was a priority for you that race. I mean,
it was kind of an extra race.
It was an extra race, I think you kind of said. But you line up for that one, and it was almost like the whole world was against Jordan Stolz. Is that?
It seemed like that, didn't it?
Yeah. It was like, all right.
We were still with him, though.
We were straight.
Yeah, we were on. We were with him. They wouldn't let Barry and I on the ice, unfortunately. So.
You know, the backstory, it was against Jordan Stolz even the race before, because they were able to keep his teammate from
because you do the two races, you do the semi.
Yeah, the semi and the final, and they all work together to keep him off, because if he would have been in there in a situation like it they had in the final, he could have helped out in that.
That's what I was kind of saying to David, and then Barry got upset that I was texting and gave him the result before it happened.
That's right.
But it was I felt like you were definitely left high and dry on that race. The two guys, for people that haven't seen the race, go watch it. But two guy, I can't remember the countries they're from, but got away early. And basically everyone was looking at you to chase them down.
Right.
And it was like, well, you're not going to go over the whole way. Was it 3.5 kilometers? How far is that race?
It's 16 laps. I don't know how many kilometers that is.
Was it 400 or 500 a lap?
I guess 400 a lap.
400 a lap,
So
3.4K?
6.4K.
So at what point did you say, okay, I just got to try and get a bronze medal here? Like, that is a hard one.
Even in the last couple laps, they were still sitting behind me and they didn't want to chase. It was kind of crazy. They had a lot of distance guys in there who are way stronger than me.
Yeah.
I'm more of like a 500,000 15 guy. And so they're like, let's put the 500 guy in the front to try and pull back this break. That doesn't really make any sense to me.
Yeah.
I think if I would have went right away on that break, if I would have, kind of known how everybody was just going to sit right on me, right? And they kind of did that break a little bit sneakily. They didn't attack, right away as hard as they could. They just kind of floated by. Kept building, built a little bit harder, so nobody really suspected anything.
It was a smart move on their part.
I mean, and Victor Thorup, I'm not trying to hate on Victor Thorup, but nobody thinks he's going to be able to pull off a break. Yeah. So
it's one of those where you're like, who won this? Right? I get it. I get it. But you just got tipped for the bronze. Did that bother you at all?
A little bit, because I was leading a lot of the laps, and they're still sitting on me, even though they're all 5K, 10K guys.
Yeah. But listen, I think I don't want to harp on that race because I think, again, I want to just focus on the two golds and even the silver. I think we're fantastic. Let's do this, though. I like to rewind the clock a little bit when we have an athlete or somebody like you. You're still young, so we're not even rewinding the clock that far. But when did you first decide, okay, I want to do speed skating? Was there an exact moment?
Yeah, when I was 5 years old, I was watching the Olympics. Yeah.
Five.
Yeah.
So hang on. Five. That was 2010 Olympics.
Yeah, it was 2010 with Apollo. Yeah.
It's early to know what you want to do in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty fortunate.
Shoveled off of, you know, track on our pond.
Yeah.
That's how I started.
You're kidding. You had a pond in the backyard and you just and you just started going round and round?
Pretty much. Like snow plowed off a track and, you know, bought a pair of hockey skates from like a local shop and started skating.
And that was it.
That was it.
And how did you near Milwaukee, right? Because there's two, I think, David, you said there's two long track speeds.
Two indoor long track rinks in the U.S.
Yeah, one in Utah and one in Milwaukee. And you live close enough to Milwaukee, right, that you could get to that track.
Yeah.
Is that easy to get on
like
the 40 track,
minutes.
Track and find a coach and everything?
Yeah, it was fairly easy. I started with like the learn to skate thing at the Pettit Center.
Yeah.
But it was just a lot of driving back and forth, you know, 40 minutes there, 40 minutes back. And it was called the West Alice Club. That was the team that I had joined, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a club.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I grew up in that club.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what age were you when you knew that you had something special?
Good question.
Did I steal your question?
No, it's a good question. I love that. Yeah.
I think when I really, like, truly knew it was probably around 15, 16. But a lot of the coaches told me I was, you know, really good, you know, when I was younger growing up. And I thought I was okay because I was actually winning like a lot of races too at a younger age.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much between 9, 10, 11, 12 because there was this one kid who, you know, got really big and strong really quickly. So I wasn't able to catch him. But I was, you know, second behind him. But at that time, I'm not thinking, well, he's, you know, growing up earlier than I am. So I should be able to, you know, beat him in the next couple of years. But I think probably around 15 when I could really see like the progress coming from the program. And I could see, like, after each season how much more time I could shave off. That's when I kind of knew.
Do you have an estimate how many hours you've skated in your life?
I have no idea. I think they just said I've raced 340, 500s or 600 and thousands or something like that. I don't know. Remember Paul was talking about that at the
I know. It was a big number, and I can't remember what it was.
You should do it for fun. I want to see if you've skated around the world. You know, like, figure out a distance. I've done it myself. I do that. I go, well, I average 20K a week swimming, so and you distance it out. But you're young now. You're 21?
21.
21.
Yep.
And so you've been to two Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's the future look like for you as you know, you've started at five, so you've been in the sport now 16 years. Mm-hmm. Is it multiple Olympics? I mean, there's professional racing, definitely in Europe. Is there a professional series in the States?
No.
No.
They only have like professional marathon races in Europe.
Yeah.
And I'm not really a marathon guy.
No.
I don't really want to do 120 laps with breakaways and chasing and all of that. So.
No. Yeah. You're all power. But you could also potentially hop on, become
maybe a track
sprint cyclist. Yeah. We were talking about that a while ago with your power.
I think it might work. I don't want to do too much, you know, upper body work to, you know, weigh me down for skating.
Mm.
But I think my numbers on the bike are good enough to do it.
All right. For everybody, all cycling coaches, we might have one for you here at the U.S. team. Maybe you could go Summer Olympics 28 back to Winter Olympics.
Where's the next, possible.
Yeah. Where's the next Winter Olympics?
2030 in Paris.
Paris.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there was an article about this, you being a crossover athlete, in the Wall Street Journal a couple of weeks ago or something.
What's that wrong? Did you know about that?
I didn't read it. No.
I'll get it.
Oh, is that right? All right. Well, maybe with our help, David,
we've seen Jordan do lactate testing here on the bike,
and
the stats are extraordinary. So I believe it.
God, wouldn't that be fun?
Are there any athletes like that you guys know? I mean, obviously there's like Bo Jackson and a couple guys like that went from football to baseball. But are there Olympic?
I mean, obviously Eric Heiden, right? Yeah. In the Tour de France. So.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
It's pretty.
And I think some other skaters switched over to cycling. That's a question for Bob. He would know kind of the history in that. But even now, like, I think most of the skaters are really strong on the bike.
We should.
Well, I guess you spend a ton of time on the bike, right? Is that?
Yeah.
How many hours a week?
It could be from anywhere from 10 hours a week to 20 hours a week.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Depending on the time of the year. Yeah.
And you do that type of training because it's less wear and tear on your body compared
to building endurance, I mean, I'm not going to, you know, sit in basic position for, you know, 10 or 20 hours. Like, it just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
What have you seen in wattages in a sprint on the bike?
For me? Mm-hmm. I think my highest is 2,300.
Okay. So you're in there. Yeah. That's a good power. Yeah. Okay. Tristan? never mind. We got to talk to our physiologist and figure out how we...
Never mind what I told. I told Greg if he came up to Milwaukee to skate with you, because he's never skated. I said, well, do the you know, two Olympians on the ice together. One's obviously...
Me pushing one of the tennis balls on it.
But I said, then you can bring him back to the beach and do a swim. He probably can swim.
That's bad.
I'm like, I got to find something. If he's going to embarrass me on the ice pushing a pram, I got to like take him to the ocean or something. But I'm like, I don't think Bob will be that happy.
So you found his weakness.
I found his weakness. Kryptonite. Yeah. Oh, I love it, mate. So tell us, I mean, you just leant into it, like a typical kind of training week for you these days. I mean, obviously there's not a typical because there are phases of training, but if we're talking about your aerobic base season, maybe 3-4 months ago, what is kind of a typical training week in that phase? And then as we get closer to prep, how does it change?
Well, one specific bike ride we did in Salt Lake in Park City, I'm sure you've ridden there a lot. I think it was like 12,500 feet of climbing in a day. And it was actually really hot out, like down in the valley. It was like 90 degrees. So I was drinking so much water.
And it's so dry.
Yeah. I think we were out there for 7.5, 8 hours. I had 240 ounces of fluids that I, took into my body. And I only peed like one time and it was just a dribble. So
yeah.
And it burned too. So it wasn't good.
Yeah. No, that's not good, mate. No. But so you said you're biking 10 to 20 hours a week.
Yeah.
You must be hitting the gym a bit. And I've seen some great footage of you in your own gym downstairs, which I think is so cool. Have you guys seen?
The jumps, yeah.
But it's even his own squat rack made of
two by four.
Yeah. Everybody that thinks that they've got to go join like the most epic, he's an Olympic champion that felt very Rocky Bubba, Rocky just working out. I was like, you love the word grit.
It's pure grit. Yeah.
I've gotten 400 pounds on that bar, in a little 2x4 rack. And I've actually dropped it off my back when I failed a rep. So, but the 2x4s didn't break. It held it up. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. That's gone all over social media. I don't know if you go to social media much.
Yeah, I do.
But I've seen random people that have nothing to do with you, nothing to do with speed skating, just going, this guy just won two. They don't even mention your name. They're just like, this guy is like squatting 420 pounds in his basement in this homemade gym.
And it's not like Rocky. You got to start out with the raw eggs and the...
I used to do that, actually.
Okay.
For breakfast, I would take... Do you guys know what cream of wheat is?
Oh, yeah.
Just cream of wheat.
In the cream of wheat? Have you tried that?
Raw eggs?
Yeah. Well, I cook it in the cream of wheat.
I just take the raw cream of wheat, put it in thing, milk, eggs, and then I blend it all together and drink it.
That's what I'm doing.
Next biohack.
And it was bad. It was really bad.
Jordan, I heard that you eat like 6 meals in a given day, or if not more. So, do you know what your caloric intake is?
Probably 5,000 calories. But I'm trying to get as many carbs in as I can.
Yeah.
My coach gave me a gel limit because I take too many gels in. So.
It's amazing. We went to dinner with him when he was last down. Remember, we were sitting over there. He's like, we're all eating, a burger or something. He's like, boom, another. We were just sit there. It was almost entertaining to just watch this guy eat. It was amazing.
Yeah.
After his 5 hours.
I don't enjoy it though.
You don't enjoy eating?
No.
You have to eat that many calories.
It's really hard to eat a lot of calories and be healthy.
Yeah.
Because most caloric dense foods are unhealthy.
What is your go to then to get to 5,000 calories? Typically, what does that look like?
It used to be couscous, and then it switched to, frozen pizza, couscous, and then, pasta, rice, and that switches off like each summer. Mm-hmm. So for one whole summer, I'd eat frozen pizzas. That's when I was like 15. So pretty bad diet. And I upgraded to couscous for a whole summer, getting better.
Yeah.
Then pasta and rice. And now I switch back and forth between like a pesto pasta and rice. And it's like, where am I going to go from there? I mean, there's not much other things that I can find. They have dried mochi bricks, if you know what that is.
Yeah.
And I used to eat those for breakfast. Yeah. Get 100 grams of carbs in right away quickly.
Did Tristan, when you were here, did you do the metabolic test in our lab here?
Yeah.
And that's what it showed you? I think it said
I burned like 2,000 or 2,500 calories an hour just sitting around.
Are we doing a test with him tomorrow?
Yeah,
I think we're doing over the next couple of days doing
testing. I'll be curious. I know we're not going to share all your information to the world, but personally, I'm just curious to see what your metabolism is like. That's incredible, mate.
We'll have to see how it is.
That's really cool. I want to get back to your actual training. How much of your gym work are you doing every week? You do gym every single day?
Not every day. I mean, gym work probably 3 times a week.
Yeah.
Like 2 strength sessions with some heavy squats and then some lighter squats, single leg. Do a lot of reps up to like 60.
Tell me, you were asking a question before we came on.
I was telling Jordan, one of the most impressive things I saw in the Olympic coverage is his squatting. Because in my heyday, you know, might do 405 for one set of six, maybe eight reps. He bangs out several sets like that of 10 reps, right? Mm-hmm. You do five or six sets, 10 reps at that weight, which is...
What was that?
It's Herculean.
What is that weight? How much?
405 is four plates. Yeah,
405 plates. 405 pounds. Mm-hmm. So that's almost like all three of us, just like on your back.
Yeah.
Should we do it?
Need to warm up.
Oh, that's incredible, man.
Very impressive. I mean, that's like NFL combine impressive. Like, you know, to be able to, like the strongest guys in the NFL combine probably squat less than Jordan.
Wow.
You know, in terms of reps.
Yeah,
reps and sets like that. Yeah. And the endurance and the strength combined, that combination is super impressive.
Are you lining up a third sport for him? By the time you're done with his podcast, mate, you're going to have three or four sports.
Yeah.
I think it's important to note that up to now, the paradigm, the sport has been not to do heavyweights.
Is that right?
So top speed skaters were discouraged by their coaches to do heavyweights.
Was that because of mobility?
Because it might increase your body weight too much and may decrease speed. But basically, Jordan's proved them all wrong by changing that paradigm. So
I don't want to let them know that I proved them wrong.
Okay.
I don't want to keep it a bit of a secret, right?
But you're also very conscious of not putting on shoulders. Like I've heard you say several times, I don't want to put anything on.
I don't want anything up.
Yeah.
I don't do any upper body work at all.
Yeah. So, no. Yeah. And is it very, for me in endurance sport, different to you, I always love to do very specific strength training. I actually didn't love the gym terribly much as an athlete, but I'd bike big gear uphill, I'd tow a towel around my ankles when I'm swimming, very specific type of work. Is there a way to do specific, like big parachutes behind you as you're skating? Is there any kind of resistance work that you can do that are actually specific to
what
you're
doing? Not like that. I mean, we do like turntable exercises where you're imitating the crossovers and you have a stretch band.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that up to 10, 20 minute sets.
Okay.
So that's more so for endurance, but nothing like when you're just isolating a certain muscle group with, a weight. I mean, it's usually when you're skating, it's going to be quads, glutes, just kind of your entire lower body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I reckon we do a parachute on you. We'll get you on one of the big lakes up in Milwaukee next year. We'll get a huge parachute. Or even just have the three of us in a sled behind you. With a whip.
Right.
I think that would be really good for you, actually. Yeah.
What is your passion sport, if you could do anything outside of what you've done historically? Is there something that appeals to you?
I mean, track and field, it seems pretty simple to just be a 100-meter sprinter and, have some fun with that, earn some fast times.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Everybody would like you, right? Because you're the fastest man in the world.
But everybody would like you.
Just because you ran for 9.5 seconds, right?
Right.
Yeah. But maybe cycling, if you could be at like Tadej Pogacar's level, I think anybody would want to do that.
Yeah.
Anybody would want to be him. So
with your jumping, maybe long jump too.
I don't know.
There are quite a few sports that you could do right now. And I think we're lining up your career.
I think track cycling would be the easiest to switch to. So.
I think track cycling would be good. So,
Is that a serious consideration for you, or just an afterthought?
Not a serious one. I mean, it would be something wouldn't mind trying out. Nothing serious.
What is the age band for your sport? Like, when do people generally?
I mean, usually it's around late 20s, but now it seems like it's been getting earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of skaters have been going from early 20s all the way to mid 30s. Mm-hmm. Like Kjeld is 36 now, and he's still skating pretty good. Mm-hmm. I mean, he got third at the Olympics. So.
Now we've just had your coach, Bob, walk into the studio.
Yep.
Shout out, mate. I've got to talk about that relationship that you have with Bob. How long have you guys been working together?
Since I was 14, 15.
Okay, so it's been quite a while now. And,
Bob,
I'm going to repeat your answer. Did he come to you, or did you reach out to him? And what did you actually see in Jordan?
No, he called me because he was missing a coach at the time. He needed a coach. And so it was pretty special to have a 14-year-old kid call you and ask you for help. So I could not say no. I had to go out and do what I could. And then I could see right away that he was good. I didn't know he was going to become the best skater in the world, but he looked like he was very good. And he easily made junior world teams and stuff. But then within the next year and a half to 2 years, once he started doing summer training, then he just took off. And that's the time when he could see, like, holy cow, this guy's going to be really good.
Well, I'm going to just quickly summarize a really great answer from his coach, Bob. So, Jordan, you reached out to him when you were 14.
Yep.
and I'm going to ask you a follow-up question on why Bob, but and really what Bob saw in you is he really saw something phenomenal, and then saw you really improve over those couple of years. And it was for him, it was a really exciting to have a 14-year-old kid kind of know what they want, you know, really be, you know what they really want to achieve. And for you to reach out to Bob, obviously that meant the world to him, and he's obviously arguably the greatest speed skating coach in the world. We can say that because we're sitting across from a two-time Olympic champion here, mate. Yeah. So I'm going to do that. Arguably the greatest, but we can say But mate, why Bob? What was it about Bob?
I had heard a lot of good things about him, you know, around the rink from a lot of different people. I heard, you know, Bob Corpy was the guy, and he coached from 80 to 84, I think it was, right? So I'd heard, you know, a lot of good stories. And when I, you know, first got his summer program, I was, you know, looking over it, and it was actually totally different because my summer training before that was just ride the bike for, you know, every day, and that's it, just ride the bike. So I wasn't doing weights or anything like that. So when I got his program, I was like, you know, I think this would probably be good because this other guy that's beating me right now, I know he does a lot of weights, and, you know, I thought I need something to change, and then I started doing his, and yeah, I could see, like, you know, in just a couple months how much stronger I was getting. And then going to the next season, I was probably faster right away in the first week on ice. So,
but it's not just about the program. It's like we've been around you enough, and David, you've been around them both a lot more than we have.
Right.
There's something stronger there than just...
Well, I think it's probably his mentality as a coach. Some coaches are super strict and not... they're really OCD, like some of the people that I know, but I think he's more so lenient, and he really understands the skaters and what benefits them and how they kind of react to a program and a workout versus some people. It's just their ideas.
It's like when you talk about coaching, there's science and art.
Yeah.
I feel like Bob's got a really good mixture of both because he has the compassion to understand what an athlete's going through. He can, I feel like he can sense your emotions, you know, what you're feeling. And that to me is a really great gift. And any relationship, whether it's your husband, wife or whatever, but a coach athlete, if you can have it where that coach can really tell what you're going through on any given day, that's really magical.
I think that's really important for a good coach.
I just noticed in Bob that he's incredibly perceptive too. He'll pick up on little things, and then he might pick up on five things to be improved, but he knows sort of which one to communicate to work on first. And so there's an incredible ability there that I've noticed in my team.
Is he coaching you?
And he's helped to coach me.
All right.
Yes. So even I can be.
Working with the greatest coach of all time. If you're going to do it right, don't do it by halves, David. Do it full on. I love it. That is so good. Well, Bob, thanks for joining us again, mate. And congrats again, buddy. Amazing.
Since I probably won't make the Olympics anytime soon, I have noticed that there are three medals there and there's sort of three of us.
Actually, where are those medals? Have we got those medals? We got to actually
right here.
I couldn't believe it. Barry, did you feel how heavy this is? Like, seriously, I think it's real gold. David's wife, Tyus, said no way, but I think it's real gold.
It's heavy. Cool as that.
Nobody wants to touch the silver one.
I bring it over here.
Do you have like cases for these so they don't get scratched? Yeah, or are they made to be durable?
Yeah.
They're definitely not durable.
Can we try them on, see how they work?
You can put them on.
It's hard to
It's cool that it's got the event and everything.
This is amazing, mate. To go to one Olympics and turn up with three medals. Come on.
Jordan, what was it like when you put this on at the Olympics?
It was just kind of a realization, like, this is the highest level you can get in your sport, right?
It is, by far.
That's what it felt like when they put them on. Because you get World Cup medals all season, put it on, right? First World Cup felt amazing. You know, my first World Cup win, I actually stand on the podium. And then it's like you started from the beginning there. And then you reach the end here with a gold from the Olympics. So.
We don't deserve these. We better take them.
I feel like I'm
Oscars.
It was nice of you to win enough medals to go around.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, hang on, I don't want one of them to miss out.
For taking the silver one.
I would have been happy with the silver, trust me. I got the lead medal. Does that term still get thrown around? Oh, you got a fourth place. You know how awful it feels. What I got. Yeah.
So actually getting the medal in the Olympics can feel bad, you're saying? It's a negative thing?
Well, even places are always the worst. I don't know how you feel. I always feel like you get first, obviously, best. Third, you made the podium. Fifth, top five sounds pretty good. Second is like, ah, I didn't get gold. And fourth is like, ah, I didn't make the medal. So you never want an even number in sport.
I got you.
Yeah. Odd numbers are better. That's
accurate. Yeah. That's pretty accurate, actually.
Yeah. I mean, the silver medal, though, I mean, it was still one of those performances where I think all of us were like, I don't know, who is this guy that beat you? And I don't know.
Looking back at that, like, I was confident with what I was doing going into that race. So there's not, you know, something I would have changed, honestly. I mean, now looking back, there may be something just on how I, you know, attacked the race. I think I should have just, you know, sprinted it, I guess you could say. Mm. But I don't know. I just felt like I was going harder than I actually was. And then when I saw the lap split, I was like, this isn't very good.
Yeah.
But I think the lead up to the race was good. It was just in the moment.
Isn't it funny? Yeah. You're going to ask yourself those questions for a long time. Yeah. That sucks. Uh-huh. You're like, oh, could have I done that? Or would have I?
Right.
And it's like, this is why I always felt after a sport, no matter what happened, you got to almost write it down right away.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, as time goes on, you go, oh, maybe if I'd done this or not. I want to.
I had a quick question. Maybe this is the shift you were thinking of. You've been in the sport for so long, and I'm curious what metrics and things that you're tracking much more so today than you were maybe 5 or 10 years ago?
Well, I used to only track my heart rate, and I didn't really know anything about what a good heart rate zone was. So when I was just riding the bike, I would go out for 2 hours and have a heart rate of 165 beats per minute for every day before I started Bob's program. So, and I think more so now it's like lactate. I mean, watching what I'm doing in the gym, how much I'm lifting, how fatigued I am.
Yeah.
Of course, the watts. That's my favorite thing to watch. So, yeah.
What devices do you use for your?
I use a Garmin, like the Rally power pedals. Yeah. You know, hook it up with the Garmin heart rate, strap, and I just kind of compare those two because I'm not going to be doing like a lactate test every second of the day.
Sure.
I was actually looking to try and find some sort of like lactate meter that's, on you the whole time so you can see it while you're riding or training. I don't know if that's actually a thing or not.
They're working on it.
Working on it.
Yeah.
Companies out there.
Yeah.
I would love to have that.
Yeah.
What did you think of the lactate testing we did on the ice?
I thought it was really, on the ice?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was interesting to see how high I could get it. Yeah.
What was it?
I think it was 18 maybe. Which,
oh, wow.
18,
Was it a three lapper?
It's 4 laps on, 1 lap off. So it's not like the highest lactate I'll get, right? From a
so you had Tristan, go up?
So Tristan came up to my watch.
Tristan is our physiologist here that works with us. Yeah.
And so we actually tested this lactate between sets so we know the lactate.
Yeah. And I should say that the Jordan's a part of our Volo athlete program. He's our star athlete, and we are building quite a squad of incredible athletes. And so for you to come down here, do the lactate testing, metabolic testing, working with Tristan. You've also done a bit of blood work. Did you end up doing blood work with us? Have you seen?
Yeah, I did a little blood
work. Was there anything that stood out to you on that? That was not that you have to share all your scores. I'm just saying if there was anything.
I thought the hemoglobin was good and red blood cells, right? Testosterone levels were okay, not as high as David's, so I'll have to work on
it.
If you look at our models, we don't want to be, there's a right level of testosterone too, by the way.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you track those things, blood biomarkers? Is that something that's part of
your... with them, I mean, I'm not doing it myself.
Yeah.
It's just funny seeing the athletes talking about their stats and their scores there. Who's the highest testosterone? Who's got the highest brain score?
Exactly. We're all trying to figure out where we can beat each other.
Right.
How about sleep, Jordan? Is sleep something that you
That's something. I mean, I like to try and get the best sleep I can, but sometimes it's not that way. I end up staying up a little bit too late.
Do you use a device?
I was using the Oura Ring. Kind of watching like deep sleep and all of that. Something was weird. Like my HRV is actually kind of low. Which is, strange. Yeah. Some of the days that I felt really good on the bike, the night before, my HRV was pretty low.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's something about that. It'd be interesting to talk to Tristan about HRV, because it's a fight or flight response when they say it's a low. So you being such a dynamic sprinter, it'd be interesting, David. I don't know what you've seen in your research.
I follow my HRV very closely, and I see that it's very highly correlated to how hard I did train that day.
Yeah, like, So
it's not necessarily correlated with how I feel,
but
I think it's important to sort of act on the statistic a little, in addition to how you feel, because you may be on adrenaline and feel great, but HRV says you're is poor, it usually corresponds to maybe I trained too hard in the last day or two. And it's important to listen to that.
Where do you think HRV sits, David, in terms of predicting health? You know, like, is it a top five type biomarker or our wearables?
We still don't know, and we're trying to get the data on how it predicts longevity.
Hmm.
But what we do know is that relative to your own values, it's a good indicator of am I overtrained or under-rested?
Yeah.
Am I ready? Yeah. So, like, if my normal level, for example, is about 50.
Yeah.
And if I know if I fall in the low 40s, that's usually a little bit overtrained.
Interesting.
After a full week of speed skating, I might get into the high 30s, and I know I'm, okay, now I got to rest up and recover. Yeah. But another person may have an average of 80 or 30, and they're not necessarily healthier or less healthy. It's just... they need to know that's their baseline.
So you to you is what you're noticing.
Now we may eventually discover some connection to longevity, but the utility right now with what we know is sort of relative to your own baseline.
Mm. It's interesting because I don't have a very high HRV either. Yeah. I'm only like 35, 37. My wife is like 125.
Right.
She's the most laid-back person in the world to put up with me, you can see.
There was this one Norwegian sprinter I know, and... Yeah. See, my heart rate only gets down to like 44, 45.
Mm-hmm.
My endurance is absolutely way better than his. He actually has some of the worst endurance in the field, but his resting heart rate's around 32, 33 beats per minute.
Mm-hmm.
And his HRV is super high.
Mm-hmm.
But his endurance is
horrible. There's so many variables. And this is why I say variables. We can go a cross-section of thousands of variables. And what David and his team through data science are actually using, well, what are the key variables? We focus on longevity, but there's also a bit of a performance that we look for on the day-to-day as well.
Yeah, and it's really finding that balance, too. That's difficult because sometimes what's best for performance in the short term is not necessarily best for longevity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what may be best for performance in the long term is similar to what's good for...
It's like hematocrit. So I've got a high hematocrit. So I got drug tested like you wouldn't believe because my hematocrit always stayed way above 50. And they say, if you're above 50, you got to sit out 3 months or whatever, you know, you must be on EPO. But I just had that. So I was like, oh, it is a badge of honor. Now I'm getting old and all of David, it's just like a massive red flag. You know, your hematocrit's too high. For longevity's sake, actually don't want that.
I wonder who's higher between you two athletes.
What's that?
I wonder who's got higher
hematocrit.
Do you remember the number?
I don't remember.
I'd say because I was an endurance athlete, I might have that one because that's just more like the oxygenated blood, like aerobic, and then being that he's basically VO2 raw power. Like my lactate was like 1, 2, you know, like nothing. He's 18. It's like we're completely different species.
And then of course on our charts, the hematocrit shows a range, and if you're over the charts, you just hits the max and it stays there. So both of you are sort of maxed out.
I know. We're both screwed. It's worth it.
Is the max? Is that something you...
It's not that high, though.
Yeah. Well, that'll build.
It's not build that bad for longevity, though. It's not.
We got a lot of ideas to help you build the VO2 max. We can get that up. I think that'd be really cool just to keep working with us to build that VO2 up. It's always handy to have. What's your VO2?
Mine is like 47.
Oh, that's pretty good.
And I would love to break 50 at my age, but I can't quite get there.
I'm the same.
My number one thing for getting your VO2 up, if you want, oh, now I'm going to use it on here. Just hop on the treadmill or bike and do something like 12 by 40 seconds as hard as you can with 20 seconds recovery. So 2 to 1, do that, 2 sessions of that a week for about 5 weeks, bike or run, it'll shoot up. And lose some weight because obviously, well, for me, I have to lose some weight. Yeah.
I was able to project my VO2 max back to when I was in my prime rowing, and it was probably in the low 60s.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't have a wearable endorser, sponsor?
No.
All right. We'll talk post-show. I've got some ideas. All right. Who is your favorite wearable device, David? Do you have is it Aura, Garmin, Whoop?
Garmin's my favorite.
Yeah.
No, I would say Aura's good for logging sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But the Garmin's pretty versatile. It's pretty accurate in predicting VO2 max, monitoring sleep, so kind of all around and pretty accurate. I'd say more accurate than other brands.
Yeah. Cool. All right, guys, before we go, this has been really cool, by the way. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate you sitting here. We've all been so excited about having you. What's coming up next, mate? Are you on break now for the summer? you know, you can kind of wind down.
A couple of weeks break, some media stuff, you know, do my testing here, see where my baseline is.
Nice, good, yeah.
And then a couple of weeks from now, start training it up, building it up. Mm. And see where I go from there, see where I can improve.
Yes,
I'll probably be coming back here to do some testing. So.
That's awesome. We love having you down here, mate. So you come down here as much as you want. Well, we'll send Tristan up to you on the skates as well.
You're right.
I think that. Do you get on the ice during the summer, or is that?
Insel and you know Germany has some summer ice, so I might go there, but not really in the U.S. So.
Yeah. But do you? I kind of think about it now. You're coming off the Olympic high. You've heard that. You know, you heard people talk about you have this Olympic high. Is it kind of taking a deep breath, I got to go again? Or is it like, no, you're really fired up and you feel good?
I think I'm pretty motivated and feel good just because, you know, the world sprints and the world all arounds didn't go so well. So.
Yeah, I get it. Right? I get it. Yeah, yeah. You didn't quite capture everything you wanted.
That's not good. Everything, yeah. That's and the 1500 at the games. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of races and they're all kind of packed together too. So yeah. I guess you got to be strategic and how much you train for each one or value each one.
Right.
But are you going to go sit on an island and have a couple of cocktails or something? Like, did you celebrate your 21st birthday? Did you?
Nope.
You know, we got some makeup time here then.
All right.
We got to.
Might have to.
Yeah. before we get into the final bunch of questions, which I like to do, which we do an overrated, underrated. Anything else you guys got for him?
Dave?
Yeah. No, I just have to say it's been an honor being part of this journey with you and seeing your successes and I'm looking forward to doing a lot more to try to get you ready for the next one or two or maybe even three Olympics.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. It's been great working with you.
There you go.
Yeah. No, it's been awesome to have you in today and you're very inspiring. The whole team, you know, upstairs, 160 people, as we mentioned before, cheering you on and, It was awesome to watch the Olympics.
It's been great.
Yeah, I think you got a fireside chat with the whole team tomorrow too.
Yeah, that should be fun.
Be up for that.
Yeah.
Can we finish with some overrated, underrated? These are kind of rapid fire. Yeah. I know we've kind of said our goodbyes, but I'm going to bring it back. Cold plunges, overrated or underrated?
Overrated.
What do you think, David?
We've already
absolutely
done it.
Disagree.
We can always add our 2 cents.
Right. Yeah. Underrated. That's my number one biohack. I'm sure I feel like a different person coming out of it.
We're going to find out. We have a study coming out, right?
We do.
That's right.
We got a big study coming out.
Nothing like building more mitochondria, burn up more, increase your metabolism.
Once we've done the study and we've proven that it's not overrated, we're going to get a cold plunge to you right away.
Right now, it's just theory.
I mean, it's all theory.
Right? I think it helps performance, but maybe like the guys who think of it mentally, like, oh, I'm going to get in the cold plunge and I'm going to be a different human because I got in a nice tub. Not looking at a physical performance.
For me, again, from performance standpoint, it's different.
Performance standpoint, I think it's probably rated where it should be.
I think even for non-performance, I would say it's for somebody to do something hard to start the day.
Yeah.
To feel like you've accomplished something. For most people to hop into a 45-degree cold tub is really brutally hard for them. And then they can tick a ball. I think there's something about the mental side that I kind of like as well. So,
I think you get used to it. Yeah. But I think from a longevity benefit standpoint, helps me mentally, first of all, and anything lowering stress is good for longevity, and it does increase mitochondria, and people say, how is your metabolism so high at 53? So from a longevity standpoint,
there we go.
You know, I certainly like it.
I guess we'll see what the study says.
That's right. We'll see.
That's why we're doing the study, to see if it's worth getting in that cold water.
All right, next one, I'm going to do a couple of these because I'm conscious of your time, but meditation, mental training, visualizing, overrated, underrated?
Well, meditation or visualizing?
Well, they kind of go hand in hand, don't they? Or you like to separate them. Do you meditate?
I don't meditate.
You don't meditate? No. Well, visualize. You must visualize. You can't not see the future.
I think that's up to the individual. I might visualize more than another person does, but I don't really realize it because that's just me myself. So I think I would say it's underrated just because I feel like I'm always thinking about skating, like constantly. Like, I don't think there's a minute or 2 minutes that goes by. That I'm not thinking about
you guys getting what I'm saying? Right? That's so, right.
Probably underrated. Just because I feel like some people that I talk to, they don't really think about it as much as I thought they would. And maybe that's why they feel the need to have to visualize and meditate. But I feel like I'm doing that constantly already myself. So I think it's underrated.
That's powerful.
I agree with that. It's highly underrated. Visualization is so powerful. I've done a lot of different sports, as you know, and and I'm a master of none, right? but in every sport, it's helped me to visualize my actions, including skating, but everything from, you know, golf, wrestling, hockey, I mean, tennis, every sport I've done, visualizing the day before helps mm-hmm. you actually mm-hmm. realize that technique.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Mike?
I'd say both underrated, meditation and visual.
Yes, I think they're both underrated as well. I think we could do a lot on that. And it's my favorite topic, as you know.
I know.
What about supplements, mate?
Underrated.
Underrated?
Yeah.
Is there a supplement that you were willing to share with us?
Zinc. I like the zinc. Yeah.
Zinc, yeah. Zinc's a big one. Yeah.
I mean, if I take everything, you know, vitamin D, zinc, what was the other one? Vitamin B, yeah. I can kind of feel a difference,
yeah.
actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have your top five? David has his top five, yeah. I think, don't you? Your favorite five subs.
Yeah, I don't know if I can list them on the spot.
Well, you got creatine, I think.
Creatine.
Magnesium.
Magnesium, vitamin D, zinc.
Yeah.
And.
What's the fifth one?
Is there an amino
group of things? No.
No.
We have those.
There are aminos, but they're not my top five.
Yeah.
But we have D. Do we have zinc?
D is zinc.
And do we have B in the BRG, the biomarker reference guide?
We, not published, but we do behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Mm. What was the fifth one? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I take probably 20 or 30, but there's maybe only five with some strong evidence.
I feel really good on zinc.
Fish oil. Yes.
There we go.
I will say, even with all the supplements I take, I'll still say overrated. Because I think it may be different for a top athlete fine-tuning and getting that extra 5%. But for a layperson, if they think the supplement's going to replace exercise or good diet, I mean, think of supplementation as maybe 5%, maybe
10%. That's really good. Yeah. I think you're spot on. I think there's certain supplements that work. But to your point, I feel really good on zinc. I can notice zinc. Creatine, I notice. I'm actually off creatine right now. I was getting too puffy now.
Pretty strong.
I'm going to quickly finish with this one, and you kind of answered it in the show already. So strength training for athletes, as power athletes like yourself.
Mm-hmm. I think it's... See, I got to be careful how I answer the question, right?
Yeah.
I think it's underrated, but maybe for some people, they don't really need to do it as much.
Great answer.
Yeah.
Because there are some people that are genetically have all the strength they need. They just need to convert it to power and efficiency. Yeah. You guys.
For performance?
Yeah.
Gosh. I don't think I can answer that because I'll agree with, with Jordan. It must depend on the person, on the sport.
Mm.
Because too much clearly is bad. I mean, if Jordan were to build legs twice as big, try to be Olympic power lifter, that may be too much even for him.
Or even like for a distance guy, like in skating, if they're kind of slower twitch, but they want to squat 400 pounds, so all they do is work on squatting, they're probably not going to be good enough.
It's not specific.
Versus a sprinter who gets there super easily. They don't even have to lift that much to get to that level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But obviously for longevity...
It's a really big thing.
Look at the size of the guy. Look at you guys.
Love strength training.
Love strength training. I know I got to go hit the gym. We're recording on a Sunday afternoon. I think we all better go get... I feel inspired. I feel ready to go after talking to you, Jordan.
It was that medal, putting that medal around your neck.
I know. That was really... I couldn't get over how heavy it was. Mate. But Jordan, mate, really appreciate you. I'm not sure you probably realize yet the impact that you've had on so many of us, your family, and... even just all of the US. It's really incredible, mate. So
for you
to come and sit on our podcast is pretty cool. So thanks, mate.
Of course,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, hang on. We got a question from the audience. Oh, we've got a couple of questions. Have you been waving that whole time?
Question from the audience. What was the true motivation for winning the 500
meter? Okay, let me just repeat that
question. The true motivation for winning the 500? Mm-hmm. Oh, I think I know where this is going, actually. I can already tell somebody said something.
From the audience.
Yep. Obviously, the true motivation is I want to, you know, win the 500. I don't want Dabu to have, you know, the gold medal. I feel like I've been winning much longer than he was. So I don't want to say I deserved it more because it just matters on what somebody did to get to that level. But when I was, you know, warming up, I looked over at him. And usually they're doing some, you know, weird spider crawl or something. I don't know what they're doing. It's always something weird. And it was actually not that weird this day. I look over at him and he's got his pants down. And I see he's wearing Chiquita banana underwear. And I thought, I can't lose to a guy who's wearing chiquita banana underwear.
Could be his lucky underwear,
right? And then I look at Cal, and he's wearing strawberry underwear.
Like, what's going on here?
So you wear underwear under those suits?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to...
Somebody from the audience wanted to know that. That wasn't me. That's kind of a weird question for me to ask. Sure. Yeah. All right, do we have another one from the audience? Yes.
Yeah. Dave, have you calculated how much training you have to do to beat Jordan?
Not how much training, but
Repeat the question because we don't.
Yeah, so the question was, have I calculated how much training I need to do to beat Jordan? I said, well, I have calculated how many times you'd have to fall. And it might have to be like 10 times if you lose like 2 seconds each. Or as a friend of an MIT classmate said to me, he said, you know, if you improve your time by so many, like 3 seconds per year or something, by the time you're 70.
All right. So we're looking at, almost 20 years. All right. Okay. 20 years. We can do it.
And we can do that.
Yeah. Yep.
Bob will still be coaching then.
All right. So you'll be 41 versus 70 or whatever. We'll figure it out. That's awesome. Any other questions? Yes, from Randy.
So, Jordan, tell me the time that Bob got the maddest at you.
The maddest at me?
When did Bob, your coach, get the maddest at you? That was a question from our chief medical officer, Randy Axelrod.
He doesn't get too mad often, but probably, I would say after the mass start. I'm just going to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I saw him mad.
You got mad at him, Bob.
I saw him mad at everybody in the mass start.
Yeah.
That was just
a really frustrating race.
It was frustrating. That's where I got frustrated, and Barry got mad at me for texting David that I was mad. So, Greg, you're giving up the results. All right. Anything else from the audience? Yeah.
One more. We're wondering what your sleep schedule is like.
Depends on the time of the year. Try and get 9 hours. Oh. 9 hours total, wow. Whether I go to bed at 3 or or midnight.
Solid.
Midnight.
Yeah. So for most people, the statistics show 7 hours is optimal. But if you're working out 4 hours a day, it's probably 9.
Try to get 9.
What are your sleep scores like, you guys?
I've been cracking the 80s lately.
Look at you. I thought there was something about you. There's a better energy. I noticed there was a little glow. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And for you. What about you, David? You're always pretty.
I wish I could consistently be in the 80s, but I'd probably average in the high 70s. I have some good nights and then a bad night of sleep.
All right.
Some good.
Yeah. I'm always mid 80s. I've actually hit the mid 90s recently. Ooh. It's been quite.
Wow. I think 90.
Maybe I'm not working hard enough.
I had 90 last night After the races, after the 3K.
You had a 90 last night.
I did get a 90, and that's pretty rare for me.
It's funny. I noticed there was something about your energy today.
Okay.
What about you, Jordan?
I've seen high 60s and high 80s, so just depends.
Yeah. No, we've got to crack the 90s for you, mate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I feel like that's hard to do if you're sitting on the bike all day, dying in the sun. And
we'll figure it out. Right? We'll figure it out. Yeah. With our team, we're gonna dial that sleep in.
Right.
All right. Any other questions from the audience? This is great. No. All right. I think that was a good place to end, you guys. This has been amazing. Always good to end an episode on sleep. Enjoy your trip down here, buddy.
Yeah, I will.
Maybe I'll be around this week. We can go on boating or do something out in the sun. Yeah.
Thanks, Jordan.
Sounds great.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Amazing, man. Congrats.
Cheers.